Blog Talk Radio.
Got a roster dilemma? There's nobody better to ask than FantasyGuru.com. Here are Bull Wolf and Joe Dolan and the Ask Guru podcast.
Hello, fantasy players, and I hope your week ones were successful. I'm Bo Wolf alongside FantasyGuru.com managing editor Joe Dolan. And Joe, how was week one for you? How many teams do you have, and what was your record?
I believe 9 teams, Bo. I think I went 6-3. Also had a lot of success with daily this week using the FantasyGuru.com DFS Guru,
very nice.
Which for now is available for free for subscribers. Pretty good week overall, I would think, in terms of record. There was a lot of bad football, though. Like, just
there
some
was.
Games that were just ugly to watch. Thinking back to Monday night, the Eagles-Falcons first half was garbage. Pretty much the entire game between the Vikings and the 49ers was garbage. Then, maybe the worst game of NFL football I have seen in quite some time, the Broncos and the Ravens, was absolutely miserable. I wish we could wipe that one from the slate and just replay that game. But other than that, I think an okay week for fantasy football, no doubt.
You know, the Broncos-Ravens game was interesting because there were some issues with that game, obviously, but there were also two defenses playing very well. That Broncos defense is really, really impressive.
Yeah, it's really good. Those two defenses, I know people are going to be concerned about Peyton Manning. I'm excited to see him this week on Thursday night, a game that really I can sit down and watch closely. I can't do the close watch thing of the Sunday game simply because I'm flying around. I'm doing the SiriusXM game day show. I'm just trying to keep my mind in 13 different places at once. That's why I'm excited to watch the national game more than anything.
Yeah,
I just want to see Peyton with my own eyes here.
I am not too concerned about Peyton, but maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. But I also want to start, Joe, with a bit of a mea culpa and explaining why you are the one to listen to here. And that is, let's see, remember last week I said that I was having a 2-quarterback draft that night, right, on Wednesday, that before the Thursday game. At that 3 spot, once again, did not get Aaron Rodgers or Andrew Luck, had to take Le'Veon Bell, did that. Later on in the draft, took Martavis Bryant. And then Thursday, my brother, it was his birthday. We were having a surprise party at my house, so I was very concerned about getting everything ready for him. And I committed the ultimate sin, did not set my lineup, left in both Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant in the flex, and, of course, ended up losing by less than 10 points if I had played D'Angelo Williams, who I have and drafted for the only purpose of playing him in these first 2 weeks. I would have won, and I lost. And the fantasy gods rewarded me and punished me, as they should have, by injuring both Dez Bryant and DeSean Jackson on that team. So I take my penance for that. That I deserved. But the same night, I also got a text from you that I did not set my dynasty lineup in fantasy in my fantasy league, and that meant that I didn't get Rob Gronkowski's points. But I didn't feel quite as bad about that one because – you know, I would have assumed that Gronk would have just been in the lineup. My fantasy league is a different platform where you have to actually set your lineup,
set your first one. Yeah.
You have to set your first one. And so the fantasy gods, I think, did not punish me. I still won the game beating Ben Fennell. So I feel like the fantasy gods punished the team that really was my fault, but let me off the hook on the other team.
Wow. That is, I had a much better week one than you did.
I think I still went 6-3, but I did not have quite the daily success that you did.
Yeah, I had some good daily success. A lot of my favorite plays this week panned out. I've lost a couple of blind bids though here in week one. It's the problem with week one is not understanding how people in your league are going to bid, and you know at FantasyGuru.com, we always get questions. Why don't you have a fab strategy article? Why don't you talk about fab budget? The reason is, quite frankly, is because I've never been essentially happy with something that's been written up or that we've put out, because ultimately it's like the biggest fantasy guessing game. Like, I'll go out and I'll tell you, Dante Moncrief's out there, I would put 20 to 25% of my waiver budget on it. But if somebody in your league goes for 45%, you're not going to get the guy.
I think that more than any other sort of fantasy strategy, fab budget allocation depends on knowing the guys in your league and how they operate, right? More than anything else, even more than an auction draft. You have to sort of know the history of your league and how guys work. Listen, there was a guy in one of my leagues who put $70 on James Jones.
Yeah, I actually in an auction league that I'm in, I put a $16 bid in for James Jones, and I always put in a weird bid. Like, I never do it in increments of five, or you always want to do a little bit of an irregular bid.
It's the Dice K Matsuzaka thing from all those years ago. I think they did like 51.1 million or something like that.
But you know, somebody in the league spent $40 on James Jones, and I'm like, you know, I didn't get him. I wanted him, but I didn't get him because I didn't make a big enough bid. But in hindsight, I wouldn't go spend $41 to get him. So
certainly not.
It's one of those things that, like, you have to know the way your league operates. I always say this about two quarterback leagues too. You know, I want to get my quarterbacks early in a two quarterback league, especially one that's 12 teams or bigger. But if you're in a two quarterback league where even in 12 or 14 team leagues, the owners in that league let the quarterbacks kind of drop down the board a little bit, well, then you have to adjust your strategy. It's all about knowing the people in your league. And maybe at some point when people go nuts in week one and week two, maybe it's better to save your full fab budget until the later weeks when the crazy guys in your league aren't going to have as much to spend.
Exactly. All right. Well, how about the action on the field, Joe? You know, so great to be able to actually watch real regular season football after the preseason. You know, we had our opinions heading into the year, but to get to see these guys actually in action and how their coaches are using them, things like that. Was there anybody who stood out as someone who you are now higher on than you were entering the season after watching them in week one?
Yeah, Carlos Hyde.
Yeah.
My concern with Carlos Hyde, and I was very vocal about this, was I felt, Bo, that he could be an Alfred Morris type for fantasy in that he's the clear lead dog, but he's going to play on a bad team, and ultimately what's his upside? Well, we saw Alfred Morris, Bo, in week one have a very Alfred Morris line. He ran for 121 yards, but he didn't catch a pass and he didn't score a touchdown. So even though he had a great game on the ground, his fantasy upside was very much limited. However, Carlos Hyde, Bo, if you were to watch that game and I were to introduce this to somebody who hasn't seen a down of NFL football in the last 2 or 3 years, and you put that game on and I were to say, that guy's the best running back in football, you would believe me if you hadn't seen football in 3 years. He looked explosive. He looked powerful. He even caught the ball a little bit. I have to say, after week one, Carlos Hyde looks like the real deal to me. All the caveats remain. I'm still not sure the 49ers are going to be a very good team, but their defense looked a lot better than I thought it would, and Carlos Hyde certainly looked a lot better than I thought he would.
And that defense is not terrible. I mean, that was a really, really ugly game, but it was not the Bucs defense that he was running through. Very impressive and obviously certainly a guy to watch moving forward. How about on the other side, Joe? Anybody who you watched in week one and now are reconsidering your faith in entering the season?
Yeah, I was really high on Allen Robinson, and I know he left this game with an injury for a little bit. Nothing to do with Allen Robinson, Bo, but one catch on 6 targets
for 27 yards.
Bortles was bad, and Bortles was really good in the preseason. And look, as we've talked about a lot, people want instant gratification from their quarterbacks, their young quarterbacks. They want them to be really good right away. And it didn't used to be like that. Remember, Carson Palmer, Bo, sat for an entire season before he even played. And he was the number one overall pick. What you try to do is you try to weigh the fact that quarterbacks still ideally need time to develop with a guy's struggles. But the fact of the matter is Blake Bortles, after starting out okay last year, his mechanics started to break down, and he was really bad in week one. So Allen Robinson would be the guy who I was high on preseason, who I am really concerned about right now. You need to see at least some level of improvement from Bortles. If Bortles is okay, I think Robinson will be fine. But he was a lot less than okay in week one, and that's my concern.
Bortles misses receivers by such a wide margin that it's incredibly disconcerting. I mean, he's not just like placing the ball in the wrong area. He's totally missing guys. This is sort of what Vince Young used to do when he was on Tennessee. And listen, I saw that from Jameis Winston this week as well. These guys are you know, I'm worried a little bit about Vincent Jackson and even Mike Evans when healthy, because those quarterbacks are ugly.
Oh, no doubt about it. Those are big concerns. Now, Jameis Winston, he ended up putting up some numbers for Tampa after they got their clocks cleaned early on. But Robinson's a big disappointment for me. Because now, Bo, let's put it this way, though.
It's Robinson, only 1 week. We don't want to go too nuts.
But it's 1 week, and he was productive last year when he was healthy, even with Bortles. So right. Let's not freak out here. But those are definitely two guys who week one has made me look at them in a different light for sure.
And then in terms of holding patterns, how about somebody who maybe didn't have a good week, but you are not worried about? For me, this would be Peyton. You know, watching him, the only bad throw that looked like it was really old age was the pick six, where he tried to sort of force it in arm strength wise in the face of pressure and couldn't get it there. And then mm-hmm. Jimmy Smith was able to make a nice play. But other than that, he was missing guys by just a little bit. It seems like he's just sort of trying to calibrate how far his throws are going. You know, he is an old man. He's got to get used to this old man body. I think that Peyton will get there, and he has obviously great receivers on the outside. Emmanuel Sanders looked outstanding just in terms of the flash that he was showing, and obviously we know what Demaryius Thomas can do. So I am not really worried about Peyton, although it will be interesting to see what he does on a short week against Kansas City Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm not freaking out about Odell Beckham. I think ultimately the Giants need to get him the ball more. Just 5 catches for 44 yards in week one against a Dallas defense that coming into the year you would say wasn't very good. I just think the Giants were out of sync. I think Beckham will get his. But one of my main reasons for that is I thought Reuben Randle looked terrible. He just looks really slow. Did you hear Chris Collinsworth talking about Reuben Randle during the game?
I think I missed that.
Collinsworth said he basically – if somebody out there is listening, correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't rewind the TV or anything, but I'm pretty sure Collinsworth said he talked to Reuben Randle, and Reuben Randle basically admitted that his knees were shot and that he's playing with bad knees. And you could tell the Giants are going to have to force the ball to Odell Beckham, and that's might make him a little bit more inefficient than you'd like, but I think he's going to have huge numbers either way this season.
All right, Joe, well, let's turn the page from week one to week two, what we've got coming up, and take a little bit of a news roundup here. And it has been a bit of a slow news week so far, but let's get to what we do have. And we'll start with that Thursday night game, Broncos at Kansas City. C.J. Anderson limited in practice on Tuesday, but it looks like he's going to play. Obviously, you're still starting C.J. Anderson if you have him. And I will say that Ronnie Hillman looked pretty good against Baltimore.
Yeah, pretty good is relative, though, after that game. Ronnie Hillman yes. averaged, what, like 3.5 yards a carry? Nothing
right.
Nothing ridiculous. C.J. Anderson and Justin Forsett, though, both had terrible games on each side of the football, and those guys were high draft picks. I'm not freaking out about Anderson. I want to keep my eye on this, but note that he did play significantly more snaps than Ronnie Hillman. Anderson was in the 72% range. I think Hillman was below 25%. So right now they were still operating with Anderson as their top back. Clearly, maybe even Hillman played more than they would have liked, considering Anderson had the toe, and as Gary Kubiak said, he rolled his ankle. There's another guy. After 1 week, I'm not going to freak about. That entire offense looked bad. And, Bo, even if you think Peyton is quote-unquote cooked, that offense is simply going to be better just because even a cooked Peyton is going to be able to operate a reasonably good NFL offense.
And they are in a division where the defenses, for the most part, are not that great. I mean, he's going to have 2 games against Oakland. The San Diego defense, certainly nothing special. Kansas City, pretty good. They had 5 sacks last week against Houston. So we'll see how they do Thursday night. But Peyton's got a schedule that he can take advantage of, whether or not he is old Peyton or not. All right, how about for Kansas City? On the other side, both Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce, full participants in practice. Maclin has a back, Kelce has a hip, but it seems like both those guys are fine.
Travis Kelce was dominant in week one. That's a guy that I'm really glad had his coming out party, because people were like, seriously, Kelce, this offense? I'm like, just watch the guy. He's really a special talent. Took a hard hit. I believe it was Kevin Johnson, the rookie corner from the Texans, really popped
him. Go Deeks.
And he's significantly smaller than Kelce, but he popped him and banged him up a little bit. But it looks like he's going to be fine. So Kelce right now, Bo, that's a guy you don't even have to think about. He's in your lineup every week.
Joe, we breed him tough at Wake Forest.
Absolutely.
That's what Kevin Johnson brings to the table. I actually would be not concerned, but if I had a better option than Jeremy Maclin this week, I would consider it because he's going up against a really impressive Broncos secondary. And if you have somebody with a better matchup, I would consider it this week.
Sure, absolutely. That's fine. I think Macklin's one of those guys who's kind of in the wide receiver three mix every week if you have him. And he's probably in your lineup. But maybe you had John Brown on your bench or Stevie Johnson, and you're right. Like, you know, I'm not loving the matchup. Might be an okay week to sit him.
All right, we'll stay in the AFC West then and go to Oakland, where Jack Del Rio says Derek Carr is in good shape to start this week. Obviously, you are not starting Derek Carr nor Matt McGloin in a non-two-quarterback league, but it makes a difference, obviously, to Amari Cooper and to Latavius Murray. McGloin is not going to do anything for that Raiders offense, and he was, like, the biggest check down Charlie I've ever seen in that game. But Derek Carr obviously gives them a little bit more of a boost.
Yeah, if you're a Latavius Murray owner, you got bailed out because McGloin was checking it down to him quite a bit. He had seven catches in week one. The game got away from them. They couldn't run the ball as much. Derek Carr, I think it's good news, Bo, right now. The Raiders have apparently contacted Christian Ponder and have said, look, just keep your phone on this week. If Carr can't go, we're going to have to sign you. But the fact that they haven't signed Ponder yet is a good sign for Derek Carr. That would be reasonably good news for an Amari Cooper, reasonably good news for Michael Crabtree. But those guys right now are both in the wide receiver three mix, Cooper especially.
They did treat Amari Cooper like a superstar in that game. They were force-feeding him the ball early, and then when the game got out of hand in the fourth quarter, he was nowhere to be seen. They let him rest. So they do know that Amari Cooper is sort of the key to that offense, which is good to know moving forward. Yeah, all right, how about
– Wonderful.
Go ahead.
Wonderful. I said, yeah, okay. Cooper's wonderful. That's he's not somebody to worry about. I think with bad quarterback play, he'll be fine this year.
Yes. Okay, St. Louis. Todd Gurley practicing – early in the week, even in full pads, what do you make of that? Jeff Fisher says he's not going to make any declarations one way or the other, but he is not ruling out Todd Gurley, which he did rule him out in week one and in the preseason. So perhaps there's a chance that Gurley is going to get on the field sooner than we thought. Trey Mason also working his way back from the hamstring injury.
And the Rams, even though they beat the Seahawks in week one, Bo, they did not run the ball well. Benny Cunningham averaged under 3 yards a carry. Now he had over 100 yards receiving. That helps if you used him for fantasy, obviously. He's a good receiver, but he is not the type of guy who's going to pound the ball between the tackles. And ultimately, this offense is going to need to pound it between the tackles. I was drafting Todd Gurley in the late fourth, early fifth rounds of drafts. Personally, and I know this can make me look stupid, it's because I thought he could be a league winner at that spot. And if he plays, I'm willing to roll him out as a flex in week one to see what happens. But if all systems are go, I expect Todd Gurley to be a fantastic back this year, especially with Trey Mason banged up, Bo. That's the wrench thrown into this thing. People just assumed Trey Mason's going to be healthy and this. He's not healthy. So Todd Gurley, I drafted him in MFL 10s. I drafted him in several leagues thinking he was going to be a league winner. And I would be very comfortable if I had Todd Gurley throwing him in my flex as soon as he plays. It could be as early as this week. Wouldn't expect it yet, but, I mean, just the fact that we're hearing these reports, Bo, is a good sign.
Yeah, and I didn't expect the Eagles to trot out Zach Ertz in week one when he was coming off an injury because they had the whole season to go to bring him along, and yet they did, and he played a lot of the game. And if the Rams feel comfortable throwing out Todd Gurley in week two, you're going to play him because if they're comfortable putting him on the field, you should be comfortable putting him in your lineup.
No doubt about it. Todd Gurley is one of the most talented backs I've ever seen. I know we said that about Trent Richardson, and everybody throws that in your face when you say that about Gurley, but they're different players. I'm excited to see Gurley, and the fact that he's rehabbed this quickly from an ACL injury makes me feel even better about him.
Let's talk about a reason why we should take all of these predictions from reporters about who's going to be involved in a game with an enormous grain of salt. Remember last week we talked about a report that Bryce Brown would be heavily involved in the Bills offense in week one? well, he was waxed this week. So just a good thing to remember. How about staying in Buffalo, actually? Stephon Gilmore saying that he is the one who wants the opportunity to cover Gronk. Obviously, you're still going to play Gronk, but what do you make of that?
Good luck. That's what I said, exactly. Stephon Gilmore. And he's a great corner. But the problem is Gronk can just body him out. See, you just – I mean, Gronk is literally, Bo, the easiest fantasy player to start ever. Have you ever gotten a question about Gronk? Like, should I start Gronk or this guy this week? It's the easiest call ever. You never get a question about him. I can't remember a guy who is an easier, no-doubt start from week to week than Rob Gronkowski.
I think that's well said. All right, last one, Joe. The Cowboys giving up a conditional fifth-round pick to the Raiders for wide receiver Bryce Butler. I don't know why the conditional is as high as a fifth. That seems like an overpay, even if they don't even ever have to convey it. I think it's if he plays six games. But still, the fact that they're willing to pay for him, what do you make of Bryce Butler in Dez Bryant's absence?
He's big. He's fast. He's got some athleticism. My concern would be that he hasn't been able to consistently get on the field with the Oakland Raiders. But, exactly. Bo, seeing big, talented guys succeed with a change of scenery is not uncommon in the NFL. And the Cowboys might need him because I'm still not convinced that Terrence Williams is particularly good. There's another guy on the waiver wires. He was on the wire in a shallow bench league I'm in. I actually had Dez Bryant, so I'm like, oh, I'm going to go pick up Terrence Williams. Somebody put in a $45 bid for Terrence Williams out of a $100 budget, and I'm like, all right, I'm just not going to top that. Like, I put in like a $21 bid simply because I had Dez. But I was like, I wasn't going to approach that number. I'll find somebody else to fill in. And my questions about Terrence Williams make me at least intrigued by Bryce Butler. If you're in a deep, deep, deep league, and you've got one of those rotating bench spots, maybe it's worth a gamble to take a shot on Bryce Butler simply because he's a gifted player. He's playing with Romo. They've got the line. They need to replace Dez. They were very pass heavy on Sunday Night Football. But I wouldn't be going nuts here simply because the Raiders couldn't find a spot for him, and that's a concern for me.
What's your take on the Arizona running back situation, Joe, in fab budgets? Were you placing a higher claim on Chris Johnson or David Johnson?
Well, if I had Ellington and I'm like, holy crap, my running backs suck, I need somebody to start this week, it would probably be Chris Johnson, but that's a guy I'm staying away from in all of my leagues. I actually didn't have Ellington anywhere, just the luck of a draw, I guess. My personal preference long-term is David Johnson. You saw the burst on that touchdown reception that sealed the game. That's the guy I want on my bench. If I need to start one in week two, week three, it's probably Chris, and I'm doing it grudgingly. I don't want to do it, but I think he's going to be the lead back. And here's something about Bruce Arians that drives me nuts, just as an aside, but before we get to the questions from the people, he's like, oh, David Johnson's got to earn his spot with the team.
It's the top.
How long has Chris Johnson been with the team?
Yeah.
How many practices has Chris Johnson been through? So, like, just because Chris Johnson's been in the league for 7-8 years, all of a sudden he defaults even though hasn't even been with the team as long? I don't get that stuff. And I think sometimes coaches are too smart for their own good, my opinion. But ultimately, I think David Johnson's the more talented player. He's the one I want long-term. If I had to start one this week, it would be Chris, though.
Well, you know, Bruce Arians is all about guys being professional football players and not college football players. So maybe that's all it is. He doesn't like college offenses. David Johnson needs to prove that he belongs in a pro offense, right?
That's what I say.
All right, let's get now to the questions from our listeners. And remember, we will only see these if you use hashtag AskGuru. So do that moving forward. And we'll start with Victor Daniel Gomez, who wants to know – actually, that's a question from last week. Let's start with Paul A., who says, speaking of Chris Johnson, is he worth using a number one waiver wire pick? He has Jeremy Hill, Justin Forsett, and Frank Gore. I would probably say not to use that one spot.
On Chris Johnson, that is as easy a no as I'm going to have this week. Yeah, no way. That you save that number one waiver priority for if Dante Moncrief's out there. If you need receiver help and even James Jones is out there, I'm fine with using it. Certainly not on Chris Johnson with that running back depth, though.
Yeah, I like to save my number one spot unless there's a guy who is plugging right into my starting lineup, and I am desperate at the position. So, and certainly Paul A is not with those running backs. Okay, next question from Dennis Chatanier, who wants to know Doug Baldwin or Terrence Williams this week.
Terrence Williams. Doug Baldwin, Bo, I'm not even sure he's the number one wide receiver on the Seahawks anymore.
Tyler Lockett played how many snaps?
Over
70% of the snaps, something like that? Yeah.
He played a significant number of the snaps, looked explosive. Tyler Lockett's a guy who should be in your lineup considerations if you get return yards. Maybe he's even locked into your lineups if you get return yards, because this guy's an explosive playmaker and they try to put the ball in his hands as many ways as they possibly can. So I'm excited about Tyler Lockett. Doug Baldwin's a guy who's just a bench option at this point for me.
All right, here's an interesting question from Joe C714. Who is a better long-term stash on your bench, Ronnie Hillman or Matt Jones? And I think, you know, we both like Matt Jones, the player, but I would say that the problem with Matt Jones is that it's similar to Alfred Morris. They're not going to throw a ton of passes to the running backs. He's going to be touchdown dependent. If CJ Anderson gets hurt, obviously Ronnie Hillman's in a better scoring position.
Let's put it this way. I think Hillman's got the better shot to be an RB1 when the year is over. Does that make sense to you?
That's true. And I also think that he has a better chance to maybe be a flex play on a week where you have injuries elsewhere in a PPR league, because he's, you know, he was the 2-minute drill back over CJ Anderson with Payton this week. Obviously CJ was banged up a little bit, but he has a bit more of a role. Matt Jones is probably a better player, but I think that the ceiling with Ronnie Hillman's a little bit higher.
By the way, I'm still holding Matt Jones, people. If you're in a shallow bench league and he was one of your like 5 or 6 bench guys and you need to drop him for Moncrief or James Jones, maybe you lost Dez, fine with that, but I'm still holding him. That wasn't a guy who I was drafting, Bo, with the intention of him paying off in week one. That's not why you're drafting Matt Jones. So right. I think Hillman in this particular question, as you said, he's probably the better guy if you're like, holy crap, I'm dying this week, I need a cheap flex. He's probably going to have a better shot of paying off in that role for you. That's why I think Hillman's fine. But I'm holding Matt Jones to anybody who spent a pick on him and it just is holding him as their 4th or 5th running back.
Yeah, I got you. All right, this is a good question about offering a trade for Dez Bryant if you are in that kind of position to do so. This player, same person at JoeC714, he has Jordan Matthews, Antonio Brown, Calvin Johnson and Allen Robinson at wide receiver. Should he offer Jordan Matthews for Dez? I would say yes.
I would say absolutely not.
Really?
No way. No way.
Well, he's got Antonio Brown and Calvin Johnson.
Yes, and Jordan Matthews, Bo, I think is a wide receiver one this year. I think you're trading a guy who is right now. Jordan Matthews caught 10 passes in week one, okay? Now, the Eagles aren't going to be playing from behind like that. Their offense is going to be in better sync, but he was the clear go-to guy in that offense. He should have had an 11th catch. It bounced off his face mask and was picked off. I'm not trading Jordan Matthews for Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant, they say, is out 4 to 6 weeks. As we saw, if this is that Jones fracture, that's an injury that crippled the season of Kevin Durant in basketball. These foot injuries sometimes do not go away. I would be more likely to offer Allen Robinson and just see if the guy takes it, because he might be panicking and saying, holy crap, I need a receiver who's going to plug in. No way. If I was a Dez owner and I got an offer of Jordan Matthews, I would throw a freaking party. I would take off of work. I would throw a party. I'm like, holy crap, some guy is giving me the Eagles' number one receiver for a receiver who might not play until week 8. I would take that deal 100 times over if I was a Dez owner.
Well, once again, that's why you were the guy to listen to here.
10 catches for 104 yards in week 1.
I'm just going to move things along.
And he should have had a touchdown.
Well, he should have had a touchdown, and he should have not had a Sam Bradford interception on the docket right off his face mask. Let's talk about that Eagles game quickly, Joe. Could you believe Chip didn't go for it on 4th down?
I was very, very surprised. And the problem was, Bo, I think they rushed the kick as well. Now, frankly,
the whole thing was a disaster.
If you're Cody Parkey, you got to make that kick. It's 44 yards indoors right down the pike. Ultimately, that's the Occam's razor of the situation. Make the freaking kick. But Chip Kelly should have gone through for it. They were cooking, Bo. So what did Sam Bradford complete, like 15 passes in a row? Something like that? And, I mean, it was easy. Easy peasy, just dinking. And you watch the way they were moving the ball in the second half, and you're like, all right, this is what Chip Kelly wanted. This is
and why that's the whole point of the Eagles offense, though, is to put the defense on their heels in the second half. Just line it up and go really quickly. I mean, they were not going to stop it on fourth down. Even if Parkey does make that kick, the Falcons have plenty of time to go down the field and kick a field goal of their own.
Whereas if they get
the first down, the clock is running down. I thought it was an outrageous decision.
And the thought process that bothered me was, you're like, everybody's like, take the points. Well, you know, even though I'm saying Cody Parkey's got to make that kick, which he needs to, it's not a chip shot. So there is a third option in there. It's that you miss the kick, and Atlanta has even better field position than if you go for it on fourth down and don't get it. So I thought it was a really poor decision. I thought the kick was rushed. I thought I thought the Eagles were taken by surprise, Bo. I thought they were surprised that Atlanta came out so physical and dominated the line of scrimmage in the first half on both sides of the football. I thought the Eagles kind of got to let the game get away from them. And then in halftime, they adjusted. They came back. You can argue they should have won the game. They probably should have. I thought that was a really, really poor decision on Chip Kelly's part, and I don't think he'll make the mistake again.
Well, listen, with Chip, everybody sort of likes to put their own philosophies onto Chip because they think he's this really smart guy. He's got the sports science and stuff. But the truth is he has been more conservative than the average head coach when it comes to fourth down decisions since taking over as head coach. So, I was disappointed in the decision, but I shouldn't have been surprised. That's what he has done for the last 3 years.
Very disappointed. Anyway. Very, very.
All right. Fatty McFat Z wants to know, should he drop Deion Lewis for Delanie Walker?
This is a completely context-dependent question.
Completely context-dependent.
If you really need a tight end. By the way, Delanie Walker's banged up. He had that thumb injury. He left the game. Scored a touchdown. By the way, Marcus Mariota, I think, looked better than anybody anticipated. And I'm a Marcus Mariota fan. Good. I thought he should have been the number one pick in the draft.
I think Jason maybe should be fired. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought Mariota should have been the number one pick in the draft. And I'm sure a lot of people in Tampa are saying that right now. But if you need a running back, then no, do not drop Deion Lewis for Delanie Walker. What's your tight end situation? If Deion Lewis is a guy you picked up as your fifth running back just because he's a guy who has value, then sure, you can drop him for Delanie Walker, but that's a totally context-dependent question.
I agree. And I was super impressed with Marcus Mariota, just to piggyback off that. But the one thing that gives me a little bit of pause moving forward is that defense was giving them everything short. And Mariota, to his credit, was taking advantage of it. I don't think that Bucs team is very good at all, but Mariota looked great, and everything was right there. The accuracy was outstanding. I was really impressed. If I was a Bucs fan, I would be furious to have Jameis Winston and not Marcus Mariota after watching that game.
Me too. Absolutely.
Okay, Ask Guru. Shazad wants to know, who should he play in a PPR this week, Mike Evans or Dante Moncrief?
The luxury you have here is you can wait because Indianapolis plays on Monday night. But, Bo, at this point, I think I'd lean to Moncrief. Just because I don't know anything about Mike Evans' injury. I thought Jameis Winston looked very poor in his first game, which, by the way, Marcus Mariota looked great. That's wonderful. Jameis Winston looked poor. Guess what? A rookie quarterback's supposed to look poor in his first start. So I'm not saying right here Jameis Winston's going to be a bust just because Marcus Mariota ran circles around him in week one. That's not going to be the case. That said, I'm going to take Moncrief playing with Andrew Luck over an injured Mike Evans playing with Jameis Winston. And if Evans comes out and catches two touchdown passes this week despite being hurt, well, then you can put him in next week. You can put him in next week. You don't have to worry about it. But I'm still going to go with Moncrief, who might have been my favorite waiver ad this week if he was out there, simply because he's playing with Luck. And I didn't think Jameis Winston looked great in his first game.
I would agree with that. Okay, next question from Dan Farringer. Should he hold on tight to Duke Johnson, or go for Ronnie Hillman or Lance Dunbar. This is a 0.75 PPR.
My first instinct is to hold tight to Duke, but Lance Dunbar is interesting.
Now, if you need a guy to plug into your flex, go for Dunbar, right?
Mm-hmm. But I think Duke Johnson still hold simply because I think the Browns. Our guy Adam Kaplan from ESPN has told us all offseason that the Browns want Duke Johnson to be the guy, and that now they got their butts whipped. They lost their quarterback against the Jets. Might have actually improved the team, but I think they're going to settle down and they're going to realize Duke Johnson's going to be the better back there over Isaiah Crowell. He's going to be able to catch more passes, do a few more things. I'd be inclined to hold on to Duke, but as you said, Dunbar is the guy who's going to be in flex consideration this week. And that's he might be a guy, Bo, who has flex consideration for the entire season.
Yeah.
If he's going to have a role anywhere close to what his role was in week one, Bo, he played more snaps than either Joseph Randle or Darren McFadden.
There you go. And they were certainly, as you said before, pass heavy. So that's why that was the case. All right. Dave Williams wants to know, he is in a 6-point touchdown passing touchdown league. His starter is Rivers. Which backup QB would you roster? Teddy Bridgewater, Colin Kaepernick, Jay Cutler, or Tyrod Taylor?
Teddy Bridgewater.
You were not too disappointed with his play on Monday night.
It was week one. Tough defense, Monday night. I think that was another team, the Vikings, that were surprised by how badly they got their butts whipped at the line of scrimmage. Unlike the Eagles, they weren't able to make some positive adjustments and come out in the second half. Bridgewater's the guy I want. I want nothing to do with Kaepernick. I'm basically, Cutler is also persona non grata for me. The decision to me is between Bridgewater and Tyrod Taylor. Consider this though, Bo. 6-point touchdown pass leagues. People overrate their effect. People are like, oh, should I draft my quarterback in the first round? That is seriously overrating the effect of that league. Studies have shown that they really don't make that much of a difference. One area it does hurt quarterbacks, though, is running quarterbacks because it decreases the value of a rushing touchdown and rushing production. And obviously, Tyrod Taylor is going to be a very nice fantasy streaming quarterback because of his rushing production. In this case, I'm going to go with the best quarterback, and that's Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, my follow-up question to this would be, is it worth rostering any of those guys if all of those quarterbacks are available on the waiver wire?
That's a good question.
Would you waste a roster spot?
That's a very good question. If I have a guy who I know I'm going to start every week, I usually don't roster a backup. Like I have Andrew Luck in one league. I don't have a backup quarterback. Exactly. I even have one where I have Eli Manning where I don't have a backup quarterback simply because I didn't find value on one. But I do like to mix and match sometimes. I have a couple Stafford-Palmer pairings. In this case, I'm starting to consider Palmer my flat-out starter.
Yeah, Palmer didn't look bad.
No, he had a couple forced throws, but, you know, yes. That's what Carson Palmer does. But, yeah, you're right. If I had to pick one, it's Bridgewater. But if there's somebody else out there, I don't have a problem dropping my backup quarterback.
All right. Next question comes from at Yenders, who wants to know, what do you think of this trade? His CJ Anderson for AJ Green.
Another context-dependent question. I think it's very fair for both sides. If you need a receiver and the other guy needs a running back, this is a perfectly fair trade. See, these are trades that I think are – teams should look out more if you're loaded at running back and need a receiver, need some balance. The trades I never really get at this stage of the year are like, oh, I'm going to trade Marshawn Lynch for DeMarco Murray. And my question is always like, why are you making that deal? Like, what's the point of that deal? This trade can make sense for both teams. If you want my opinion, I can't really tell you which player I'd rather have. I think AJ Green's role is safer, but I'm not freaking out about CJ Anderson. I just think it's a very fair trade that can work out for both teams.
All right, let's pound through the rest of these here as we get to the tail end of the show. Mike Ortiz, Standard League, his Terrence Williams for Sammy Watkins. Would you do that deal?
I would take the Watkins side. I think he's a better player. Although it might be closer than it sounds because you're getting the guy in, I think, an offense that's going to throw more passes in Terrence Williams, who for 5 or 6 weeks is probably going to be the number one receiver for the Dallas Cowboys. So this deal is closer than it sounds, but I would take the Watkins side. I'm going to bet on the talent. I think week one, Vontae Davis just shut down Watkins, and the Bills didn't need to force the ball to him. They had the game in control.
A couple quarterback questions from the real C. Nolan this week. Ryan Tannehill or Carson Palmer, and Tom Brady or Sam Bradford?
Palmer and Bradford. Bo, that Buffalo defense scares the living hell out of me.
As it should.
I have no problem. I actually do a spot with PhiladelphiaEagles.com, and they said, who's your surprise sit of the week? My surprise sit last week was Peyton Manning. My surprise sit this week is Tom Brady. And I know he was the number one quarterback in fantasy for the week, but going on the road to Buffalo against Rex Ryan, his arch nemesis, I have no problem starting Sam Bradford over Tom Brady this week.
All right. Moving on here. Justin McCulley, should I put my flex between Latavius Murray or Amari Cooper?
I think I'd lean to Murray simply because of the injury situation with Derek Carr. Good question, though. I was happy with how much Murray was involved in the passing game. He played a significant share of the snaps as well, so that's the guy I'd go with.
Okay, next question from Mike Ortiz. Should he trade Demaryius Thomas for either Randall Cobb or Odell Beckham?
Once again, why are you making this deal?
Yeah.
I just...
It's a challenge trade, and why? What's the point? Give Demaryius another week.
Why would either side make this deal is my question.
Right.
Like, after week one, I mean, which guy would you rather have heading forward? All three of them kind of had down week ones. Cobb got the touchdown, but he didn't look 100%. Mike McCarthy admitted after the game, Bo, that he wasn't 100%. That it would have been totally acceptable if he had decided he didn't want to play in week one. So, Odell Beckham, the Giants look terrible. The Giants look like one of the worst teams in football. I can't even believe they were winning the game late in the game and were even in a position to blow that game the way they did. I'm going to ride it out with Demaryius in this instance.
Okay, I would agree with that. Chris Lopez, Russell Wilson or Ryan Tannehill this week?
Russell Wilson.
Okay.
Ryan Tannehill, let me just throw this out here about Ryan Tannehill. Did not look good in week one. I don't think he played very well.
He
travels to Jacksonville, which has a better defense than people think. Then he's got two tough matchups in week three and week four. Then he's got a bye in week five. Ryan Tannehill is a guy I'm still high on. I think he's going to have fantasy production this year, quite a bit of it. However, I think he's going to get off to a slow start as they figure out what the receiver rotation is with this tough schedule. And I think the time to make an offer for Tannehill might be during that week five bye. Matter of fact, I wouldn't be shocked if we see him dropped by that point if things play out the way I think they're going to. So I think Tannehill's going to be a second half guy after the way I saw him play in week one.
And he does have weapons. That there is no question about that.
They just have to figure out which guys they're going to use and when they're going to use them. And I don't think they had that figured out in week one.
I agree with that. All right, Peter Krasinowski, start Aaron Rodgers or Sam Bradford?
Rodgers. Seattle did not look great defensively.
No. I mean, yeah, they give up 34 points. Well, 27 points if you don't count the punt return touchdown, but to Nick Foles and Benny Cunningham. Shane Jasper. On Fantasy Guru, we have Terrence Williams over Brandon Marshall. So would you follow that? Would you play Terrence Williams over Brandon Marshall?
Yeah, because I'm concerned that Vontae Davis is going to shadow Brandon Marshall. That would be my concern.
Yeah. This is an interesting potential trade. Would you trade Dez Bryant for Arian Foster?
Yes, if I needed a running back. Now, if my confidence level is that Foster is going to play before Dez Bryant. Very interesting trade, but yes, I would make that deal. I think it's fair. Okay. Let's put it that way.
All right, just a couple ones left. Non-PPR here. Would you drop Danny Woodhead for Duke Johnson, Sproles, Deion Lewis, or David Johnson?
No.
I don't think so.
Like, I think Danny Woodhead for the time being. But we have Danny Woodhead projected 16th at running back this week.
I mean, he's their goal line back.
Yeah, because he lets them spread it out at the goal line. There's bigger lanes to run through. He allows them to mix up their play calling at the goal line. This was the same case with Danny Woodhead a couple years ago. Danny Woodhead was like a high-end number two PPR running back a couple years ago. And I got questions every week up until like week seven. Danny Woodhead's on my waiver wire. Should I pick him up? And I'm telling people, guys, this guy is producing like an elite fantasy player, and people just don't like him for whatever reason. There's no way I would drop Danny Woodhead after week one. Now, if I'm doing anything with Woodhead, it's I'm trying to trade him. But there's no reason to drop him. Sproles should be owned in all leagues, but no way would I drop Danny Woodhead for him.
Yeah. All right, last question comes from Tom Siegel, and this is circling back to what we talked about in the beginning of the podcast. This is the commissioner of my league. He says, what should you do when a member of your league starts two suspended players in week one?
Did he do it as, like, a slight to the league?
No, this was me. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm a dumbass. womp, womp, womp.
But he's throwing it back at me, which is good. I like that. I respect that.
I'm sorry. I think he should publicly shame you, which I guess he did by calling you out on a podcast.
Yeah, I gave the mea culpa myself. I came clean. I renamed my team to Shame Shame. So I feel like that did the trick. All right, last one, Joe, comes from me to you. Who should I start in my flex this week? Cunningham if he plays, Deion Lewis or Kyrie Robinson if CJ Spiller doesn't play.
I would say Cunningham if he plays. I want to see more Deion Lewis. I'm fine with him as a hold on your bench. I'm a little concerned about the Buffalo defense, but I also wonder if that might mean this is a Deion Lewis game. Because right. I don't know exactly how much production LeGarrette Blount's going to get against this defense as he returns from suspension. So I would say Cunningham, and if not, Lewis.
Well, thank you very much. I guess that will just about do it for the second episode.
Don't start with James
Bryant. I can promise that I will not do.
Yeah.
The week one episode of the Ask Guru podcast. Remember, ask questions to us with hashtag Ask Guru. The more questions, the merrier. And as I said last week, I like the leagues where there's something a little different, like 2 points PPR for a tight end, or you have to decide whether to use a quarterback 1 week or a tight end another week. So give us some of those odd questions with Ask Guru so we can really debate the strategy involved. But otherwise, we hope you all have a successful week two. Joe, I hope you go better than 6-3 this week. I will talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye. Great episode. Have a good one, guys.